I saw you saying somewhere that that Simon was always a brilliant writer, although you're biased, but he is a brilliant writer. But motor neuron disease has made him more thoughtful. And as a result, his writing is more special.
I think so. I think Simon's type of writing, Simon always had a particular take on the human spirit. He's quite a positive, hopeful person, but not in a cheesy way. He just has a way of, describing the world that is lovely and a beautiful thing. And I think living the way he does now with MND, it's like all of that is concentrated into this really powerful insight, you know, and his writing is the best that he's ever done.
I saw a clip from on Ireland AM pre-motor neuron days, and I suppose it'd be nice for people to hear Simon as he was. So
yeah,
let's just have a listen to that.
I know, certainly now as a teenager, I wrote out of a kind of a need to write, just as an expression. I was more into poetry in my teenage years and got into short fiction then, just as a further expression.
Like, you've heard that. And when you hear something like that, does it make you sad?
It does. I get a jolt. It's like a... of course it does. And actually, I played it for our son Jack this morning, and Jack is 8, and he burst into tears and was quite upset, saying, "I wish my dad was still like that. You know, why did he have to get MND?" And that was hard. But for me, it's like Simon is the same person. The essence of Simon is still the same, but it just catapults me back to when we first met. You know, when
you,
I see him
can
like
you remember that?
I can. Of course I can. I don't dwell on it too much these days. Because
but I remember, because you worked in Today FM, and we shared the same office, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. And when it came to planning your wedding, I remember, because I still say it, that I don't know who you said it to, but you had a vegetarian wedding.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, because I'm not a vegetarian, what are they going to do that for? There's some people there who are going to insist on a bit of chicken and a bit of beef. But you went ahead and did it.
We did, and actually, I'm terrible to admit now, but I'm not vegetarian anymore.
Oh, no!
No, no. And to be honest, it's to do with Simon. I mean, I'd probably be lynched by vegetarians all over the world now, but for me, when Simon went into respiratory failure, I kind of mulled over it for a while after that, and something changed in me. I don't know if it was the close proximity to life and death, but my perspective completely changed, and... That coupled with the fact that myself and Simon don't eat together anymore, food was a big part of our relationship. We used to, you know, we were big foodies and loved cooking. And now I eat tea with the kids, which is, you know, usual kid fare. And I found that when I went home to my family, I felt quite lonely. And none of them are vegetarian. And I felt like I wanted to eat what they were eating and, you know, part of the roast, and it became something that was, you know, a lonely
comforting
part of me, that I needed. Yeah. So we're not vegetarian anymore.
So there's Jack, Rafe, Arden, Sadie and Hunter.
My firstborn son, Jack, it's very hard on him.
Yeah.
And Jack would have a memory of Simon pre-motor
neuron. He does. He panics sometimes that he doesn't remember. You know, he was very young. He was only about 2. And I think he probably puts pressure on himself to remember and worries that he doesn't, you know. I suppose it's probably like that for kids who are bereaved, you know, or who lose a parent and they worry, oh, I don't remember what he was like. And but I think it's probably hardest on Jack, the whole thing.
And when I came in, you were just about to take Sadie off Simon's lap.
Yeah.
So you were saying there was a bonding.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It, obviously, with all the kids at a different age, Simon has lost, you know, deteriorated and lost certain ways of communicating. So with each child, he's, you know, being stubborn and persistent as he is, he's found a way in to draw them into and connect with them. And obviously with the twins, it was the hardest because he has the least amount of movement, or he's literally only got his eyes left to move and very little facial expression. So of course he found a way with Sadie. We plonk her on his lap, and he has this particular lovely relaxing guitar music that he plays, and he sets off on his computer a slideshow of photographs that she likes, and she just snuggles in there, and you know,
my
eventually
princess.
his princess. Yeah. So now she will, if you tell her to give her dad a kiss, she'll climb up and give him a headbutt, really not a kiss.
And she's one girl, four boys, one girl.
Yeah.
I suppose now is a good time to we had to pre-prepare questions for Simon to give him a good run at them. So one of the ones was to, and this is maybe too intimate a question, but we wanted Simon to tell Ruth and the children how he felt about them publicly. He probably tells that all the time, but...
I didn't know about this.
Ruth and my five children are the earth, the sea, and the stars to me. They are my world. They keep me alive. Living with me isn't easy. I have noisy equipment, ventilators and beds that wheeze and whistle all day and night. And strangers come into our family home, nurses to help me live this life. They quickly move from strangers to familiar faces. But it is an unusual family environment. And all because of me. And all because of M&D. I worry all the time about the effect that I and M&D have on my loved ones. The price of me being alive. It takes a lot of effort to facilitate my being alive. Just as it takes tremendous work to facilitate my making of this film. People are amazing. I don't know the extent of the cost of my being alive, of my working. I simply know that it's worth it to me. I value my life. I value being alive. And I just hope I give back to everyone to make all the effort worthwhile. I'm in love with this life, and it's worth every hardship to me.
Oh, God. was it tough for you because Colin Murray, you know, a public figure,
yeah,
motor neuron disease, and very publicly then, you know, the ravages of the disease took over and Colin died recently.
Yeah.
When that's in the news and on the papers, is that very tough?
No, we were, you feel a sense of connection with people who are going through it, knowing what they're about to go through. I think Simon was diagnosed at that stage, and knowing that he was older, we kind of figured that his progression would be even faster. I actually met his I don't know if I should say this, but his brother-in-law called to my door one day because he works in the ESB, and he was randomly kind of doing a house-to-house call. And when I mentioned that my husband, I was joking about, oh yeah, you can probably see us from space because, you know, we use so much electricity with all the equipment. And his face suddenly changed and he said, I know who you are. I know who your husband is. And he said, I'm Colin Murray's brother-in-law. And he came in and sat at the table and told me all about it and was quite upset, and quite upset to see the boys. It was a lovely experience, but very strange that we met that way, you know.
Ireland's tiny.
Ireland's so small, yeah. So because of that, I always, and you know, because obviously he's a public figure, you know, we followed his, you know, his story, as it were, in the public part of it all the way through. And I have other friends who have people with M&D in their family, and we all kind of were keeping tabs on Colin and what was happening with him.
Did you know Robert Redford is coming to Ireland?
No.
Yes.
Old friend, Simon.
I saw a picture of Robert and Simon at the Sundance Festival, where one of Simon's previous movies got an award. So does he keep in contact? Does he text? Does he call? No.
Hey, Robert, come in for a cup of tea. You never know.
You never know. So I remember meeting you, Simon, outside Imaginosity, and Ruth had been in, and I'd read your article, so I knew of you. And then I saw the actuality of your life and the wheelchair and how you communicated with people. And I cried that day. And this is a reaction you must get from a lot of people. Pity. And I remember reading in your article then that that you don't want people's pity.
Yes. I said, I am not a tragedy. I neither want nor need pity. I am full of hope. The word hope and M&D do not go together in this country. Hope is not about looking for a cure to a disease. Hope is a way of living. We often think we are entitled to a long and fruitful Coca-Cola life. But life is a privilege. Not a right. I feel privileged to be alive. That's hope.
You sent us an email. So this is huge in your head. Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it gets bigger, doesn't it? The whole thing gets bigger.
Yeah, well, it gets bigger because, you know, like, I see it all around me. I've, you know, for the last few years here in work, you know, there's been a baby boom, you know, and all you hear is so-and-so is pregnant and so-and-so is an expecting father and this and that, you know, okay. And, you know, I know
we're jumping on a bit, but would you like to have children?
Yeah, I would.
Okay, so you're sort of slightly envious of people who have a family, and it's not just about the companionship and, you know, of a wife, it's about having children as well.
It is, yeah, but it's, you know, I just want kind of normality to come back to someone, to, you know, to talk with your day and, you know, her to talk with her day, you know, normality, nothing, you know, I've no fetishes around it, you know, it's just a normal, you know, everyday thing, you know, and it's...
Just in work, so you friends, and what about work dues over the years? You know, on a Friday evening, people going, we're going down for a couple of pints. Are you coming, Ciarán?
Yeah, I'd go, but I wouldn't feel that comfortable. I just feels like I have a kind of a joint boulder on my shoulders. Just get all tensed up, you know. I don't know what it is, you know.
What goes through your head? Do you start imagining what's going to go wrong? Is that it?
I almost feel like I have to stand on my head nearly to impress the girl, you know, because you know, the thing is, if you're starting off lucky, you know, and you have the looks and the body and all that, you know, that's half the battle. But, you know, if you're starting off from, you know, zero, as I say, you know, like, you know, you kind of have to...
Well, I'm going to tell you... I can tell you, Ciarán, from my experience of life, and I'm nearly 10 years older than you, that... All of those things, they matter less and less the older you get.
Yeah.
And that the type of guys that women go for in their late teens and early 20s and into their late 20s changes quite considerably for a lot of women as they get into their 30s and 40s, because they realise with experience that maybe they're not the type of guy that they want to spend the rest of their lives with. That maybe it's the shy guy who's not full of himself, you know.
Yeah.
Who's more caring. That's probably the guy they want to spend their life with, you know. I feel from talking to you, and Jenny has talked to you at length, and she's filled us in that, and this is with a lot of things in life, that's you've nearly a phobic fear now of interacting with the opposite sex. What do you say?
Yeah, I probably do. Yeah, because you know, even if it's just a drink with one of my colleagues, you know, I still feel a bit I'm going into a kind of a social atmosphere, and you know, it's not normal, but it's you know, I just get physically tensed up, and of course that doesn't do you much good. You see, the thing is, I previous colleagues, you know, in previous jobs that I've had, they've all told me that, you know, they've with a few drinks, Johnny, you know, you lose your inhibitions, yes. And you lose your nerves and all that. But you know, I don't know. It doesn't seem to work for me. You know, it's, you know, drink, no drink. You know,
And you've gone to counselling.
Yeah, I've gone to counselling. Yeah.
With what in mind? What did you say? What you know? You arrived and you said, what did you say to the counsellor?
Well, I kind of...
just initially, I don't want the whole...
Yeah.
Hour, but initially, what was, you know, I'm here because what?
I suppose I'm here because I've low self-esteem, I lack confidence, I've never had a girlfriend, you know, and you know, she goes back to, you know, obviously your parents and this and that and your friends and your job and, you know, to, you know, pinpoint, you know, where it all originated from, you know, and I haven't been back to her now in a good while, but, But
you have your health. I know.
Yeah, just about. Yeah.
How will you do? You have your health. You have a job. You have a place. You know, there are positives in your life. There are positives in your life. And when we read out your email, we got a mainly positive reaction. You know, I'm just read some of them to you now. This is when we read out your email last week. I can help your listener who is 40 and not in a relationship. I'm just another listener, but I can help. I'm a happily married man who had to work hard to find love. I would be happy to meet this guy and help him build his confidence, maybe give him some pointers. That was one of the male listeners. I'm in the same situation as that man. I'm 42 and still a virgin. I have been in a couple of relationships, but I've never slept with either person. I've resigned myself to the fact that I will always be single. You see, that's... And then somebody else says, I met my hubby at 39. He was 39 also. He hadn't been in a relationship before. Now married with a two-year-old. So happy now and in a good place. Tell that guy to relax. The right person will come along. And I suppose that's the worst thing that anybody could say to you is relax, because that's it, isn't it? That's the monkey on your back.
That's it. If I could just relax. I've done it. You know, I've got myself. I've done everything that I think I can do. You know, to relieve this. But it, it maybe sounds a bit extreme. But I don't know if it would be worse. Either whether to say what I'm saying now or to admit being a paedophile, that sounds a bit extreme,
Hold on. You are a 40-year-old virgin.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
You have low self-esteem, and that unfortunately over the years, because it becomes a bigger and bigger thing as you look at your friends moving on and having families. So your self-esteem is probably lower than it was when you were in your 20s. Okay. And that's very fixable. That is very fixable. That is very fixable. To compare yourself to a paedophile is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
I know.
Listen, Ciarán, will you stay on, because I want to bring Jenny in here. We started this on Monday morning with an energy and a fervor and enthusiasm that was unmatched. Our search to find Kim and Kenya. Kimya. It is now Thursday, right? And it's a bit like the count over in Castlebar. Everyone's just a little bit tired and a little bit tetchy. But oddly enough, one of the first places that was mentioned on Monday morning was Ballyfin House. And of course, I just said, no, she wouldn't be going there. Why would they land in Cork if they were staying in Ballyfin House? It now appears that they are. We got on to them. Guess what they said?
No comment.
Hey. Papers say that Katie Ronan took the photo that's in all the papers today outside the Odeon Cinema in Portlaoise yesterday. Apparently, she's a salon owner in Portlaoise. Now, Pam was talking to Catherine, who owns a salon in Portlaoise and was on the show last week. She says, Catherine, how are you? There's a picture in the paper today, reportedly taken by Katie Ronan, who says she owns a salon in Portlaoise. Do you know this Katie Ronan so we can contact her? No, never heard of her. So then we got on to the Odeon Cinemas. They won't talk officially. They said it's Kanye West's second time to visit Odeon Portlaoise and he can go there and relax anytime he wants. And they did confirm that the papers got it wrong. They didn't go to see X-Men. When we asked them, what did they see? They said,
No comment!
So, seemingly then, they went off to Tullamore, still in the Midlands, to go to the cinema again. Pamela spoke to John, the manager of Bridge Centre Tullamore, the other cinema that they went to. John confirmed that they were there. He said it'd be better to talk to the cinema manager, Paul Flynn, and Pam has been calling Paul Flynn's number since about 20 to 9 this morning. Has he answered?
No.
And then, Emmett, good morning.
Sorry, I have no comment. Good morning, Ray.
Now, Emmett, do you work in a pub in Tullamore?
I own a pub in Tullamore.
You own it, right. What's the name of the pub?
Hugh Lynch's Pub, Kilbride Street.
Why isn't it called Emmett's Pub?
Because my dad used to own it.
Oh, right. Okay, right. Now, you were in your pub yesterday, which is across the road from the Bridge Centre in Tullamore. What did you see, Emmett?
Well, I was in my pub with some of our customers. Now, I can't reveal who was there at the time because we never discussed what customers were or weren't there. But I then went for a stroll and passed by the cinema, and there was a black car parked outside it and a lot of excitable young children.
Right.
So I was kind of pretending that I'd no interest at all, but I was kind of standing around anyway on the fly with my phone in case something interesting might happen.
Right.
Two people were rushed out of the cinema, got into the back of the car and sped off.
Right. Could you identify these people from pictures you may have seen on telly and in the papers?
Well, I wasn't really sure what they looked like in the first place anyway.
Right.
But, yeah, they got out into a car very quickly and went off. Now, the reg on the car was kind of 07 or 08, which is a bit disappointing. I expected it to be bigger and newer.
Yeah, right.
But there was a lot of excitement and hype.
Right.
So then we put a few pictures on Facebook. They got a lot of likes.
Right. So it was the couple who just got married in Florence and are known as Kim Kardashian and Kanye West. Can you confirm that?
It would seem that way, but why would you go to the cinema twice in one day?
On your honeymoon, in a beautiful country like Ireland, on a beautiful day.
Now, having said that, if I was going to visit Ireland, the two towns I'd head for would be Portlaoise and Tullamore.
And you'd definitely go for a pint in Hugh Lynch's in Tullamore.
Well, I would, but I can't possibly comment on who was in there yesterday.
Emmett, good luck. Thanks.